that they were talking about some things that they were doing in the class, and the neighbor said, "Oh, I hate worksheets." And I was like, "I hear ya." There's a place for them, but there's also a place to do lots of hands-on, fun, engaging learning.
Welcome to Rainbow Skies for New Teachers, where we're all about bite-sized tips and simple strategies for bright and busy new teachers.
If you're in your first few years of your career and want to make the rollercoaster ride of teaching more fun, streamlined and stress-free, you're in the right place.
We're Ashley and Alicia, the dynamic duo from Rainbow Sky Creations, and we're excited to be your teacher mentors on the go. There are rainbows ahead, my friend.
And together, we're unstoppable. Let's get into today's episode.
Rainbow Sky Creations acknowledges the traditional owners of the land we have recorded this podcast on, the Dharawal and Whadjuk Noongar people. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures.
This episode is brought to you by Transform Your First Years, a membership for new teachers.
Welcome to episode 23 of Rainbow Skies for New Teachers. Today, we're going to talk about five ways to boost student engagement. Hello, Ashley. Tell me about how your week is going.
Hi. It's been, look, I'm not going to lie, things haven't been as smooth as what I would have liked this week, but that happens, doesn't it? It happens in your private life, it happens in the classroom. It's happening to me right now.
That's it. Look, life is interesting. I don't think it was meant to be dull, and there's lots of things that are happening at the moment in the world. And I think sometimes it can just permeate through the walls of your home, through the walls of your classroom. So we thought today we'll chat about ways to boost engagement when you just feel like things may be a little bit flat.
Yeah. When that energy in your classroom takes that little bit of a dip and you think you need to really pick things up.
Absolutely. Like partway through the term, beginning of the term, end of the term. I remember a time when I walked into the classroom after a lunch break and I just looked at everybody in my class and realized there really was no learning that was going to be happening at this very moment. Like everyone just looked tired, had full bellies. Some needed to decompress because social situations had been happening on the playground. And I had to just kind of check myself and go, do you know what? It's okay if I don't smash straight into a lesson right now. Like if we take a minute to just do a little bit of connection, but maybe the lesson I have planned, I could mix it up a little bit and do it a bit differently to boost my students' engagement. So we're going to give you five strategies that you could try in the classroom. It could be this week, it could be next week, and it's just a different way that you could present a lesson to your class to get them up, not necessarily up, but get them motivated, to get them engaged and ready to participate in the lesson.
Definitely. I am a bandit in my life for forcing myself through things. I think it's the type A in me. Like I have to do this, so I'm going to do it. And I was like that as a teacher too. But when we were talking to Dave, the OT, in episode 19, he was talking about not forcing your way through doing things if you're not really feeling it in the classroom. And I think we need to give ourselves that grace in our own personal lives, but also as teachers as well. So these ideas are going to help you boost that engagement, but also it's going to help you give yourself that grace that if you do need a little bit of wiggle room or a little bit of leeway, it's okay to take that.
Absolutely. So let's jump into the first one. And this is a really easy way to boost student engagement is to give student choice, to let them take the reins and make a decision on whether or not they're going to do all 10 spelling words, or they're going to choose to add two new spelling words. Or it might be, I've got these maths activities. Who wants to play this game? Who wants to do this activity? Allow them the opportunity to make a choice. Give them that autonomy.
Definitely. There's a saying that says, when we give student choices, we hear students' voices. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. I think sometimes as teachers, we're a bit scared to let go of not the power, but to let go of the decision making of everything that happens in the classroom, because it's easy to control when we when we make all of the decisions. Giving choices can be such a game changer, especially for those learners that might be a little bit more reluctant or might not really like school. You're taking away that forceful, this is what we're doing, and you're putting the empowerment back on them. We are big advocates for student choice.
That's it. You're giving them the power to invest in their education. And I think sometimes we think, oh, but how do I actually give them student choice? Like say if you're doing an activity, you might actually go to them, do you want to do this with a buddy or do you want to do this on your own? And right then and there, they're making a choice on how they want to do that activity.
Yeah, some really easy ways to implement this in the classroom too is you could have a couple of activities. So you might choose two or three different activities that would meet the students' outcomes for whatever you're learning, the learning intention. Explain the three and then say, okay, now you can choose whatever one of these activities you would like to do. We love to do this with special occasions, special events like Easter. We've got Easter coming up, or Christmas time. We put out a few different creative ideas, and that's a really easy way to get student choice. But you might set up centers in your classroom and then say to the students, instead of saying, okay, the red group, you're going here, the blue group, you're going here, everybody go and choose the center that you're going to work at. Now, as a teacher, I can already hear people saying, oh, but what if everyone wants to go to the same center? Okay. Firstly, that's okay. Secondly, that tells you that that activity, there's something that's drawing everyone to that activity. So take note of that. Thirdly, there's nothing wrong with having two tables set up with the same center. And fourthly, there's also nothing wrong with explaining to your students, if you get there and there's too many people there, like there can only be 10 or there can only be 5, go away and you can choose that one next time. So there's lots of different opportunities to make that a positive.
That's it. There's learning opportunities in that, right? You know, communication, collaboration, listening to each other, you know, reading the room. I think as well, you can incorporate student choice into, say you're doing your history lesson or your geography lesson and your students want to research or present a project at the end of that topic. Allow them the opportunity to choose what it may be. Say you're learning about the countries or the different terrains or ecosystems and they choose which one they want to do. Or if you're doing creative writing or say like information reports and they're creating their own animal, let them choose the animal. I think sometimes we can limit it or feel like it's going to be more work for us if we give them this choice. But if you create a bit of a boundary of like, you've got these number of options rather than the world's your oyster, just choose anything, that in itself can be too overwhelming for students. So make sure you are going to give them options. There are some clear little guidelines. That's my only little advice there on top of the great advice you gave, Ashley.
The other thing with student choice, and I feel like Alicia's going to be like, hey, you're stealing my ideas when I say this, but allowing students to choose where they sit when they're completing an activity. She's giving me the thumbs up, you guys.
Absolutely.
But there's lots of ways that student choice can come into your teaching and learning. It could be about the activities that we just spoke about. It could be about the way that they complete the task. Like, is it by themselves? Is it in pairs? Is it in small groups? It could be where they're sitting in the classroom. It could be the materials that they're using. I know when I taught grades 3 and 4, they loved using technology and they often wanted to present their work using technology. But other kids really love that pen and paper. They love posters. So giving them the choice about how they're presenting their work too. So there's lots of ways that really you can mix this up.
That's it. And it could just be as easy as, you want to write your work in colored pencils? Great. Do it. You want to write it in Texter? Fine. But right then and there, they're getting empowered because they're like, oh my gosh, I'm doing something that nobody else is doing, or I'm doing something that I usually don't get to do. And straight then and there, that's an investment moment for that child. Get a bit excited having a bit of student choice. So give yourself a little challenge. Maybe look at your next week's lessons and go, how can I incorporate some student choice if this is something I'm not usually doing? So give yourself a little challenge if that's you.
Yeah. And you can do it in younger classes too. Don't have that limited mindset thinking, I teach kindergarten, I'm not going to be able to incorporate any student choice. You most certainly can. Just offer those boundaries so your students do feel safe and are able to make the choices that are within the boundary that you expect. All right, let's move on to number 2, our second strategy.
Oh, I like this one. A bit of friendly competition. Now, I love to incorporate a bit of competition to spice up a lesson. And I was very guilty of doing this, probably more so in a maths lesson than any other lesson. But when it comes to adding friendly competition, that's your key word there, friendly. You want to keep it lighthearted and fun. And think about turning those routine sessions where you might be practicing a skill or a concept in your core subjects. And how can you add that element of excitement to the class?
It's kind of like gamifying your teaching, isn't it? Adding that friendly competition in there.
Yeah, like the element of gamification, that could also be a next level up with your student engagement. That could be point number six, but they do work pair in pair. Like if we're looking at gamification, it's them getting those rewards or getting those visuals, you could say, or tokens to see that they're making that progress. So you can do that without that element of competition. But if you want to keep moving with gamification, competition does pair up with it, if that makes sense.
For sure. So you could compete with your class in two groups. They could be competing against each other. You could have smaller groups. Kids always love a teacher versus students. So the teacher versus the class, they eat that up.
Yes. And I think when we're talking about friendly competition, it's kind of like done and dusted, like in 10 minutes or 20 minutes. It's not like I'm going to get a big game chart up and we're going to be tracking who's up there and who's down there. One I used to love to do was I would split the class into two teams and I'd get a game up on the interactive whiteboard and I'd set the timer and the kids had 1 minute to complete as many activities as they could as a team. And then after 1 minute, they might have completed 20 questions. And then team B would get up and they would do the same and they would try and beat that score of 20. So all of them are working together to try and get that higher score, but they're all practicing that skill that I know they needed to practice. And it was just a different way of doing it rather than getting a game out or doing a worksheet.
Yeah, so much more fun than doing a worksheet. I was driving my kids to school the other day and we're also driving a neighbor and then they were talking about some things that they were doing in the class and the neighbor said, "Oh, I hate worksheets." And I was like, "I hear ya." There's a place for them, but there's also a place to do lots of hands-on, fun, engaging learning and a bit of friendly competition.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you could just do like a little pop quiz or Kahoots are great, but you could also just do a pen and paper one where they're all working together to try and get the answer. You could put the answers up around the classroom, like A, B, C, D are the four walls of the classroom. So one team member has to go to where they think the answer is. And that can be a great discussion in itself because if you've got half the class going to answer A and half the class going to answer C for any subject lesson, you could be then going, okay, tell me guys, why do you think this is the answer? All right, tell me, why do you think this is the answer? And straight then and then you've got students having to explain, justify their answers. And right then and there, they're having that element of empowerment over their learning by going, oh yeah, this is me taking the lead and sharing my thinking, my thoughts, and why I believe this is the way it should be.
And that's a really fun and memorable learning experience. And they're the learning experiences that stick with us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And sometimes you could even add friendly competition between classes if you've got like double stream or triple stream of a year level. And maybe they're like working together to be like, who's got the tidiest bags this week? And you've got that friendly competition between those grade levels. Or it could be a communal goal that all the teachers are just like, oh my God, we're just so over this. Like we're so over bags being everywhere or we're so over litter being everywhere. And you create that friendly competition of everyone competing against each other to get to an end goal.
I like that. I've actually never thought of doing that across the classes.
Yeah.
Genius, Alicia.
Give it a try.
This is what you're here for. Bring the genius ideas.
Amplify Music Education creates contemporary, ready-made music lessons designed for all classroom teachers, allowing them to deliver the most amazing, memorable classroom music lessons they've ever taught, all without needing any prior music experience, yet still meeting all of the curriculum outcomes.
But it doesn't stop there. The Amplify platform is loaded with resources that will complement your teaching and student well-being beyond the music classroom. It's not just fun for the students, it's fun for everyone.
Sign up for your free trial today at amplifymusiceducation.com.au.
Okay, number three, connect to the real world. Now, we know that connecting the classroom into the outside world and the students' experiences is really important for learning, but this is a really great way to re-engage your students as well, whether it's discussing local events, current affairs, exploring global issues or issues that they are just interested in. At the time of this recording, Taylor Swift has arrived in Australia, right? You know, everyone is just Tay-Tay crazy. My table downstairs, my kitchen table, is just full of beads. We're making friendship bracelets left, right, and center. But my two kids that are in primary school are making those bracelets with me. It's fine motor skills. We're talking about patterns just incidentally. Like we want to do a pink and orange, two blues, pink, orange, two blues. They're putting words there. So it's spelling as well. And my little one in year one, you can see her. She's just trying to sound those words out, to spell some of those words. And it's great. So making the most of what they're interested in and what's happening in pop culture can be a really great way to connect them to the real world and encourage that learning. We have got a blog post about Taylor Swift that we will make sure that we pop in the show notes if you want to check it out. If you've got any Swifties in your class that you want to engage with.
Yeah. And the same goes, like, I don't know about you, but every year it would come to being an Olympic year, I'd get excited because I knew that term would just be so engaged and kids would be coming in with, if their parents still got newspapers delivered, they'll be coming in with newspaper articles. Or if it's AFL season, like, you might have a class that is really AFL mad or NRL mad and you go with that. Like, you could make that part of a term focus and you just keep your class engaged, fired up and motivated with that event that's happening in their real world.
For sure. We've seen classes get really excited about the various World Cups. Well, there's so many things. And I think that's one of the special things about being a human being. It's about connecting. And we connect through these core events that are happening around the world, these exciting events that are happening. And there's something really special about that.
Yeah, I had a class one year where I just had one student in particular who was always bringing in interesting objects from home. They were bringing in newspaper articles. And I could have just squashed that and been like, don't have time for that. It's got nothing to do with what we're focusing on this week, and be like, I'm done with that. But it became that I would draw that student into the start of a lesson and be like, hey, check out what Ashley's brought in, and we'll talk about it. And what, it took maybe 2 or 5 minutes out of our day. But do you know what started to happen? More students started to bring things in. They would find interesting objects. They would share a photo. And we didn't do show and tell in my year four classroom at this time, but this became a way of us organically bringing in the real world into our classroom. The kids would start talking, I'm into Pokemon. I love Pokemon. So it'd be like, okay, how can I bring this into my maths lesson? How can I bring this into our writing lesson? And we kind of created this, I talked about this kind of wonder wall, this wonder table that just became a kind of shrine to all these cool things that we had found in the term. And then when the next term came around, we'd clear it out and we'd start fresh. I remember just having a really inquisitive class that year. And I knew it's because it started with this one kid, and we just had this ripple effect that happened through the room.
Wow, how special.
Yeah, they were special kids.
I think too, just you gave them the opportunity. And as teachers, sometimes I know it's so hard. There's so much happening and there's always all these balls being thrown at you, but just stopping and acknowledging the little humans in your classroom, which is exactly what you did, which then created this culture of everyone feeling like they belonged and that they could share what was special to them.
Yeah. And it might not have been the same the next year, but it's just what happened with that class. So
yeah,
remember, every class that you have is going to be different. If you teach the same year level, I guarantee you, even if you teach the same lessons that following year, it's going to be different because of your cohort and what they bring to the table.
Yeah, for sure.
Just something to keep in mind. That's why primary school teaching is like, variety is the spice of life. It's no day is the same. It's, yeah, I love it. That's, I miss it a bit.
That's why Alicia loves teaching. It's so funny. This is just a total side note, but we always talk about like what we love about teaching and what we love about our job at Rainbow Sky. And Alicia's reason why she loves teaching is something I've never heard before. You explain what you love about it.
What I love about teaching is it's the kids in the classroom and it's seeing them make all those connections. When we think about why we started Rainbow Sky Creations, it's because we wanted to make life easier for teachers. We wanted them to bring that spark and that joy into the classroom with different games and activities. And if I can sit there and see kids in the class having those light bulb moments, but also building up their skill set, like at the end of the day, we can all remember stuff. We know where to find the information. But if you're seeing kids learning these skills of being communicators, inquirers, questioners, analyzers, communicators, collaborators, those are the things that are going to make world changes. And I miss that in the classroom. I don't miss all the administration part of things, but I love that component of the classroom of just really getting down and connecting with the kids. And if I could just have it being a really holistic approach and every subject is interwoven, and I know there's components where you need to do explicit instruction, but when you can get the kids immersed in their learning, and that's why I love connecting with the real world, you see transformations in the class. Guarantee it.
Yeah, for sure.
That was a really long-winded answer, like most things I give.
We've gone deep, but let's move on to the next strategy to boost engagement in the classroom. And this one, it had its time in the limelight, I would say about 10 years ago, but we can't discard it. And that is open-ended questions and open-ended tasks. They are fabulous. I feel like they were a real fad for a while there. And I don't want teachers to forget about them because it really allows for that critical thinking. It allows for great discussion. It allows our students to think and maybe think outside the square. But it also allows everybody to access the task at whatever level that they're at. So an open-ended question or an open-ended task can have those students that need that extra support to get in there and show what they know. And then those students that need that more of a challenge or that more of an extension, it gets them really in there and able to do that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it might be that you're not so au fait with open-ended tasks that you could just start to incorporate it as maybe an early finisher task where you just have this question or problem. I always found it was kind of easy to start to introduce these into maths lessons because there is more than one way to get to the answer, and it allowed them to justify their thinking. I guess even still with like an open-ended task, you could still do it with your literacy where they pick and choose from a menu of writing a postcard, I want to read, I want to listen to an audiobook. Going back to that student choice, but you can incorporate those open-ended tasks with it. I actually love to do it as well with like a maths assessment. Like say if I'm doing a pretest, it may be that I sit down and we're going to be learning about 3D objects, or we might be learning about patterns. Rather than them sit and complete a sheet that I can take back to my desk, it could be just like, here are some objects, make a pattern. Like, how complex can you make that pattern? And right then and there, you've got the kids going, what? Hang on, okay. Challenge accepted. Off I go. So you're incorporating open-ended learning, hands-on learning, and the opportunity to explain their thinking, take a photograph of it. It's just a different medium and a different way of doing things when you present that open-ended task, I feel. And it can be daunting if you haven't really done them before. And I think the beauty now is that we have AI. So you could just be like, I'm teaching my students about XYZ. How could I make this topic an open-ended task? What kind of questions could I ask my students? And I guarantee AI is going to help you with that.
Yes, so smart, because I think sometimes one of the hardest things to do as a teacher is to come up with the ideas. And when open-ended tasks were really having their moment in the sun, that's the thing that I found the hardest. I got better as time went on, but it was really hard to sort of think, how can I make this open-ended? One of my favorite open-ended tasks in maths, we've got a few, but one of my favorite ones is around arrays and saying to the kids, okay, you're going to design a chocolate box. Now, the chocolate box needs to be a rectangle and you need to create an array to fill that chocolate box. What's your chocolate box going to look like? How many rows? How many columns? Or you could say to them, right, your chocolate box needs to have 24 chocolates. How many different ways could you design your chocolate box? And that's open-ended thinking where they're going to explain it. They can look for multiple different ways to get to the answer. So I've done that one many times. I love that one as a pretest or an assessment.
Oh, that's a good one. It actually reminded me of a health lesson I did where it was like, if you open up a chocolate box with all the kind of friends that you wanted, what kind of friends would you like? It's like, would you like a sporty friend? Would you like a quiet friend? Would you like an energetic friend? And right then, that's an open-ended task because they're having to present their thoughts. And it's every chocolate box is going to look different, which is the cool thing about the analogy of friends and chocolates.
Yeah. Anyway. I did this great health lesson one day and I feel like we need to create it into a rainbow sky lesson. But we had different qualities of a friend that made up a good friend. Like they were honest, they were loyal, they were kind, you know, all the different qualities. And we cut those up. And then in small groups, the students had to order the qualities that they thought were the most important to the least important. And it was fascinating and the conversation was amazing. I did this in a year five class and I did this years and years ago and it still really sticks with me. But that was a really great open-ended task where they had those boundaries in place like we were talking about earlier, but they really had to explain their thinking. And some groups were really adamant, no, this needs to go first. And then other groups were saying, oh, they were really sitting on the fence about things. And I could see the difficulties, but also the beauty with that lesson too.
Yeah. You saw right then 100% engagement. Yes. They were invested. They were so invested. And guarantee they went home and chatted to someone about it that night, if not the following day or later in that week. Because if it resonated with you and you still have it there in your gray matter, I guarantee there's a kid out there in that lesson who did too, going, I remember that lesson with Mrs. Smith. Or Miss Longhurst back then going, yeah, what do I value in a friendship?
Yeah, we need to create those two lessons. Let's put that on our Rainbow Sky to-do list. The friend chocolate box lesson and the ordering of qualities lesson.
Yeah, it's a good one. Now, the last one to build student engagement is an oldie but a goodie, and it's to utilize technology. I think with our current situation where we've come out of a global pandemic and the ways of communicating was through technology, that I feel like it's a little bit tainted, and probably teachers today don't want to delve straight back into just full technology. Like, they just want to incorporate a little bit into the classroom. And that's an easy way to build student engagement. If you're finding things are a little bit flat and you might have not pulled out the iPads or been in front of the computer in the last week, it could be just a fun way to reignite a bit of passion in the kids. Because I don't know about you, but when I pull out my Kindle, my little girl's got a Kindle and she has access to the Kindle Kids, whatever my brother pays for. And she can go on there and she's listening to her stories being read to her, or she's playing her Peppa Pig games. And right then and there, she's engaged, she's focused. And I know she's going to chat to me about it after, because I know what she's working on. I can have a conversation with her. I can ask about it. I can join in. We can participate together. So it opens up that dialogue. So incorporate some technology.
Yeah. What we were saying earlier about student choice, technology can really come into play there as well, giving students the choice to present their work or create their outcome, their work, whatever they're giving, using the technology. Or you could have students doing it in small groups, or they could have a little bid saying, I want to work on technology, put their name on your desk or put their name on a list, and then you can make sure that you're going down the list so everyone has a go. But technology is really great, and I'm actually a bit of an advocate of working on technology in partners as well. And this is the reason why. There is a lot of peer mentoring that goes on with that, and if you're a teacher that isn't 100% confident with the technology that you have in your classroom, it's a really great way to be able to get the kids to help you. And I think sometimes teachers find that part overwhelming. Fun fact, when I was in leadership at school, one of my jobs was implementing technology across the school. And that is one thing that I really found with teachers who didn't want to use it, was that they just didn't feel confident with it.
Yeah.
And I think if that's the case, then that is fine. Just introducing it in small amounts is a great way to start. If it's the case that you feel really confident with it, but you don't have enough, small groups is a good way to go about it. There's lots of limitations that come with technology, but there's lots of ways to work around it as well. And it's not the be all and end all. Definitely not. You don't have to be using it every second of every day. Even if you are one of those schools that have one-to-one devices, you don't have to be using it every day in your classroom for every single lesson. There is lots of premise to use pens and papers and games and all sorts of other things, but it is a great thing to incorporate to really engage learners. And I think too, with parents these days, and I know that I fall into this camp, they are limiting technology at home a lot more. I think you've got kids in your class that may have lots of access to technology, and then you may have kids in your class that have access to none.
Yeah.
So you're giving them that opportunity to be able to use it.
Look, they live in a digital world, so they need to build up their digital skills in how to navigate this cyber world, like cyber safety, cyber bullying. Like, these are important topics we need to be discussing with kids. And sometimes the use of technology in your classroom allows you that avenue to have these discussions. I think as well that it can just be as easy as, you've created this really cool creation at the back of the classroom. Go get your iPad, take a photo of it, airdrop it to me, email it to me so that I can keep a record of this right then and there. You're going to see them go, what? You actually want me to remember this moment? You want to see this creation so we can look back on it? And right there, them having to either airdrop it is a skill they're having to learn. Them having to email it is a skill that they're going to have to learn. So you're giving them that opportunity. And then you've got this evidence. And then it may be that that student sees that photo and they go, oh, I can build on that. I know what I can do now. They can reflect on that maybe a week later and go, I know how to make that better. I know why that problem was happening. So you're incorporating so many any skills there. And it was just by giving them the opportunity to take a photo of it.
Yeah, for sure. I always loved those lessons where if we were doing 2D shapes or 3D objects and we would walk around with the school iPads and take photos of things that they saw and then come back and create a class collage with them. I think that that was always such a really engaging way to get the kids really looking in real life, the outside world, using the technology, having the voice and choice about what they're taking photos of, and then coming together and collaborating. They're some of my favorite lessons.
Yeah, I think many teachers would agree with you. So let's recap. 5 ways to boost student engagement: student choice, friendly competition, connect to the real world, utilize technology, and give those open-ended questions or tasks a go.
Yeah, so many great ideas. Actually, one of the things that we're doing inside our membership this month, Transform Your First Years, is talking all about student engagement strategies. We've actually created a menu for our teachers to go and pick and choose so that they can mix up these different engagement strategies. And it's just a lot of fun. We're hearing some really great feedback from our members.
So if you are interested in learning more about Transform Your First Years, jump onto our website because we've got a special deal for you. So if you go to rainbowskycreations.com/secret, you can find out more about this amazing membership for new teachers, and you can join up right away today, and we'll be there to deliver you more student engagement ideas.
Yeah, you can grab that menu plus all of the other time-saving tips plus a whole library of resources that really are engaging for students. They're tried and tested.
That is one of our mottos here at Rainbow Sky.
Yeah.
Engagement high with a lot of other things.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for joining us today. We say this all the time, but we really appreciate that you've chosen our podcast to come and listen to. It actually means the world to us.
We do. We really appreciate it. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen in and to be the best educator that you can be.
For sure. What's coming up next week, Alicia? Let's give them a little hint on what we're going to be talking about next week.
Well, next week you're in for a treat because Ashley has brought on 2 guests onto our podcast. So tell us about them, Ash.
Yeah, they're like a duo like us. They're from the States and they're going to be talking us through classroom routines, why they're important, how to set them up. And if you're at this stage of your teaching and you think, uh-oh, I haven't really done a good job of getting these routines and expectations into place, we are going to solve that problem for you. There are so many great nuggets and gems in this episode.
Oh, I'm excited to listen to this episode.
Yeah, it is a goodie. Well, we will see you all next week. Make sure you come back, subscribe if you're not subscribed, so you make sure you know when that episode drops. And until then, there are rainbows ahead.
And together we're unstoppable.